Welcome to the Designing Hollywood podcast in association with the John Campia Show. I am your host, Robert Meyer Burnett. Today's episode is sponsored by Julian's Auctions. This is something new for Designing Hollywood, and I am very excited to get into this. You know that moment when the lights dim right before your favorite band starts playing, or that feeling right before the credits roll on a movie that changed your whole world in an instant? The air is charged with anticipation, and words are never going to do it justice because you really just had to be there. Julian's brings those moments back into your life through iconic artifacts and one-of-a-kind collections. Whether collaborating directly with artists, partnering with legendary estates, or working closely with discerning collectors, Julian's Auctions make pop culture with the promise of discovery and reconnection. From Elvis Presley, Marilyn Monroe, and Ringo Starr to Lady Gaga, Banksy, and Kurt Cobain, from Los Angeles to the rest of the world, Julian's Auctions is where originals find their kind. And if I can throw in a little personal aside, they have an auction coming up in December that we're going to talk about that makes my mouth water.
TCM and Julian's Auctions are back with Hollywood Legends, featuring three historic auctions over four incredible days.
We are curating the artifacts and collections with stories that TCM brings to life and we bring to the auction stage. Starting with robots, wizards, heroes, and aliens, perhaps the most iconic and beloved alien of all time will be at the center of this celebration as we unveil the original hero mechanical animatronic ET head created by the legendary Carlo Rambaldi for Steven Spielberg's E.T. The Extraterrestrial. This sale will also feature one of the most famous and legendary robots of all time, the B-9 robot from the pioneering science fiction series of the 1960s, Lost in Space. One of the wizards featuring prominently in our highlights is an original green match special effects headmaster's robe worn by Richard Harris as Albus Dumbledore in the film Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. Another of the biggest Warner Brothers film franchises of all time is represented, Batman. We are thrilled to present a gorgeous and newly restored full Batman costume worn by Michael Keaton in Tim Burton's Batman Returns.
Why are you dressed up like Batman?
Because he is Batman, you moron.
We have the complete set of lightsabers featured in Star Wars, The Phantom Menace, from the key characters in the film, Darth Maul, Qui-Gon Jinn, and Obi-Wan Kenobi. We continue to celebrate Hollywood across all eras and genres. We roll out the red carpet for glamour, grace, and greatness. Included among these gems is a singular opportunity to own iconic pieces in fashion history, such as Princess Diana's beautiful, romantic ballerina-length evening dress, designed by Moroccan British fashion designer Jacques Azegouri, timeless class. And fashion in Hollywood is represented by items designed by legendary French couturier Hubert Givenchy for Audrey Hepburn in the film Charade, co-starring Cary Grant. Included is a marigold wool coat and a knee-length cream wool dress, fitted bodice, and gathered skirt that appears as light as a cloud. We have the black satin sleeveless gown worn by Gloria Swanson as Norma Desmond in Sunset Boulevard, and the blue and white cotton gingham pinafore worn by Margaret O'Brien as Tootie Smith in Meet Me in St. Louis, co-starring Judy Garland.
There's plenty more exciting auction items to check out. To start bidding, join us in Beverly Hills and online December 14th through the 17th. Visit tcm.com/julians to learn more.
We have three guests with us today. The first is Martin J. Nolan. Martin, welcome to the Designing Hollywood podcast. Now, from what I understand, you are the co-founder and executive director of Julian's Auctions.
That is correct, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about this fun stuff. We can talk about this all night, and I can see your enthusiasm as well, so we love that, and Jason and Laura are experts and enthusiastic as well, so we're going to have a good chat.
Well, let me bring on, we have Laura here too, and Laura Woolley is the Managing Director and Head of Consignments and Appraisals of Julian's Auctions, and you have extensive experience in the auction world as well as providing high-end professional and appraisal services to private collectors. That's pretty cool.
It
I
is.
Love it.
I get to see really cool stuff. I always
bet,
say
yeah,
that
I
my
bet
job.
You've been into places that, you know, no, not a lot of people have seen or even know about.
That is true. We always joke the best security is no one knowing where something is. So I've been in some weird places, that's for sure.
I love it. And then, of course, we have Jason DeBoard right here. Jason, good to see you. You're the executive director of Julian's Auctions, and you're responsible for business development and creating new auctions for your company. And you have an emphasis on Hollywood and rock and roll.
Yes, thank you for having us. We're really excited to talk to you. Love the show, and we're excited to talk about this upcoming sale we have and anything else you're interested in about Julian's, our history, kind of what we do. You know, we've got a lot of combined experience with both Laura and Martin having been involved with the company for about 20 years now. So
wow. Well, I think to start with, Martin, I'd ask you. I mean, I've noticed there has been a tremendous surge, I think, in an interest in Hollywood, rock and roll, pop culture memorabilia in general. And we've seen over the last 20 years, we've seen Paramount had a massive Christie's auction where they auctioned off all of the Star Trek stuff. You've had all, I guess, Dollywood, Elvis memorabilia. There's been, Universal did a Battlestar Galactica auction. We recently saw Greg Jean, the great Greg Jean, who had built miniatures for things like Close Encounters. He was also a collector, and he auctioned off. He passed away, sadly, and his collection was auctioned off. But I wonder, Martin, if you might talk a little bit about what is it about owning a piece of history, owning a piece of a motion picture? And I mean, I know as a collector myself, whether I grew up buying toys from Star Wars or something, now you can buy an actual screen-used X-Wing fighter for $2.5 million if you're so inclined.
Chump change. Yeah, it's interesting. It's, as I said, it's about 20 years since I joined, and I joined Julian's from Wall Street. So I was working at Merrill Lynch as an investment advisor, talking to clients about buying and selling stocks and shares and bonds and all of that intangible assets. And I joined Julian's Auctions much to the chagrin of my managers at Merrill Lynch, because they thought, what memorabilia? They frowned upon memorabilia. Memorabilia was sort of like a fandom thing. But I saw the potential. I was curious about it. I love the connection, what these objects represent for people from their favorite movie or their favorite star that they adore. And items that become available for at auction are, you know, that connection. They're the tangible conduit, the tangible item that is actually tells the story. And I think that's what people are buying. People are nostalgic, and they're looking back to a time in their lives when they saw that movie, when they graduated college, or they met their wife, or they got engaged. Some event in their lives centered around an event, or a movie, or a show, or something that they saw. And now they're at a stage in their lives where they have the wherewithal to actually own the toys. And also what's interesting now is that this is just not fans. These items now are an asset class. People look upon these as a form of investment, part of your investment pie, where you have art and your real estate, insurance, your stocks, etc. You can also have collectibles, sort of an alternative investment. But of all the items in your investment portfolio, the collectibles are going to be the coolest, most talked about, fun item that you will own. And if it's a guitar, or it's an outfit, or a sword, or a knife, or whatever it is that you love and that you have in your collection, that'll be the fun item when you have a dinner party, an event with friends or family, or if you have it in your place of business, it'll be talked about. And museums also love to own these items because they're a draw. People can relate to three-dimensional items much more easily than, let's say, a Monet or a Picasso. And to some people, these items that we're selling, and especially with this amazing auction we have coming up that you referenced in partnership with Turner Classic Movies, which of course is a dream partnership as Warner Brothers celebrates 100 years. But this is definitely a fun industry. It's a growing industry, and we see more and more people getting involved, especially with the technology and with julianslive.com, where people all over the world can be a part of our auctions live streaming video. They can see and hear the auctioneer. They can participate by just clicking the button on their iPhone, their iPad, their laptop computer, and bid against people bidding in the room or on the phone and take home something really cool. And probably chances are in years to come, you will sell it for more than you pay for it today.
Absolutely. Well, Laura, you know, you're, I guess you'd be the Indiana Jones of this, you're going to places, you're journeying to places, you're finding things, uncovering the best of the best. What does that entail, and what makes a great piece to auction off? What are you looking for?
It's funny you say that. I actually did spend two seasons on an archaeological dig in Cyprus, but this is a different kind of labor. That is backbreaking hard labor. I think what's interesting is when you're going through, you know, people's collections or through warehouses full of stuff, oftentimes we are brought in and have to kind of walk through and help advise people on what's going to connect with buyers. And to be honest, it's a little bit of a crystal ball, but I think if you have an awareness of obviously the key pieces, the key props, everyone wants the hero prop, the thing used by the actor on screen, not the stunt double, not the photo double. So there's a certain level of discernment, but I always say that the longer I have to explain to you why it's cool, the more the value goes down.
Right.
So if I can look at you and say, ruby slippers, Maltese falcon, rosebud, enough said, that's all I have to say, right? But the minute you keep talking, and I've heard people say, especially with musicians, like, well, aren't the songs that were never published worth more? It's like, no, because nobody wants they want the Mona Lisa. They don't want the unfinished painting by Da Vinci that they've never heard of. They want the thing that they can, as Martin was saying, we often say we're in the business of selling stories. And our stories mean something to people. And so the more you have a little piece sitting on a shelf in your home, you have a dinner party and someone says, hey, what's that? And you have a nice, neat little story to tell them. Oh, let me tell you what that is. That's the kind of piece that we know is going to sing. And those are kind of no-brainers in our business. You know, there's certain obvious things. Obviously, you know, maybe an X-Wing fighter is like the Picasso of the 21st century for generations coming up right now. And I think, honestly, the generations are valuing their history faster than the previous generations, where we look at it took, for instance, you know, 20 or 30 years for the Beatles market to really blow up. In the 80s is when it really started to happen. Now we're seeing people buying things while the artists are still active. I mean, Lady Gaga's things are already selling. Films and television shows are wrapping, and at the end of the show, things are already selling. When Breaking Bad ended, the Leaves of Grass volume, I think it was the day the show ended, went up and sold for over $60,000. So that the speed with which we're seeing everything kind of accelerate. And I think a lot of it's to do with what Martin was saying. Engagement is key. And the younger generation's very hip to technology. And that's allowed us to make things much easier for people to discover, to bid on. And again, as Martin said, on julianslive.com, it's so easy to register now. It's not a very complicated process. You can do it all from your iPhone.
Right.
So you stumble upon something on social media, you click on it, you go, you leave a bid. It's that easy.
Well, Jason, you're developing. I noticed that one of the cool things when you go to the Julian's Auctions website, there's a bunch of different kinds of auctions, whether it's rock and roll, the movie auction you have coming up in mid-December, the 14th or 15th, is incredible. How do you decide, or what's your thought process behind the kind of auction that you're going to launch? Is it usually just a single subject, a single person, a genre? How does that develop for you?
Yeah, I mean, we're always kind of reaching out to different individuals, collectors, estates, principals from, you know, like film, television, music artists. So we're always reaching out, trying to find cool stuff that we know our clients and customers would be into. And every day is different at Julian's Auctions. You know, and that's why I love working here. Like, we get to handle and sort of research and sort of go deep into the history of a lot of very cool items that most people will never get a chance to see, even if you go to, you know, a big museum or something. You know, we're dealing with this stuff every day and it's always changing. So for us, you know, we're always building auctions. Like, you know, we've got our Hollywood auction up now. We've got our Dusty Hill auction that's happening next week from ZZ Top. But in the background, we're always building into next year. And, you know, there's always a lot of cool things happening. Obviously, we can't talk about things until we announce it, but we're always sort of looking at what's going to capture people's imagination, and also reflecting back on what we've done in the past and looked at what has been successful, what's really, you know, gotten a lot of people involved. And sometimes, you know, we do big multi-consigner Hollywood auctions and music auctions multiple times a year, but then we have the single owner sales, whether it's someone that's passed or someone that's still with us, you know, like we did the Betty White estate, and that brings out fans of all ages because she's someone that just touched everyone. She was always relevant. She was always hip, and she had like a really long history of very cool projects that she was involved in. But we also work with people like Janet Jackson, and those auctions are fun because they bring out the fans. So it's people that typically have never participated in an auction before. So it's all completely new to them. It's exciting. Whereas the multi-consigner sort of recurring auctions that we have, like Hollywood and music, we have people that look forward to that every, you know, few months when we announce those. And what we're really moving towards is being more of a company that's always on, where we always have new and cool things going up on our website, being available for sale. So we're going to be doing more frequent auctions and probably more highly curated auctions as we go forward. But it's interesting you mentioned about Star Wars toys, because I think we have a lot in common, because that's totally what started collecting for me, because I came into this world as a collector first. So I sort of understand the intensity of collecting and sort of that mindset. So I totally get that, because I started collecting movie props, 20 years ago, because to me, I sort of stumbled across that, like I was buying replicas, and then I was like, oh, you can actually own a Star Wars blaster or something. So that got me into that world. And, you know, you mentioned that X-Wing that sold. And, you know, I'm friends with David Mandel. So it's, for me, it's exciting because I'm sort of still very involved with that collector community. And, you know, I know all those people. So it's, we kind of live vicariously through each other and see what, you know, for me, I like to keep tabs on what everyone's buying, because it's fun to see that excitement when they, you know, score something that's a holy grail for them.
Sure. Laura, I wonder if you could tell us what makes a great piece. Like, I know in rock and roll, you want, like, I'm a huge Prince fan. Like, I would love to own a Prince guitar. I mean, if I could ever have the money to afford it, I'd love to have a Prince guitar. But what makes a great piece? What is it? Something somebody touched? Obviously, you want to see something that's screen used. But in terms of what are some of the things that make a great collectible to buy at auction?
All of the above. So that, I mean, honestly, not to be to be glib, but you know, you mentioned Prince. Actually, that was one of the first projects that Jason and I worked on together during the pandemic. We sold the number two cloud guitar. The number one is at the Smithsonian. And Martin actually had to take it into Beverly Hills during the height of the pandemic to have it an MRI scan done of it.
So I showed up with a guitar, and they were very happy to have the business. No strings attached.
But I mean, honestly, it could be, that's maybe an extreme example where you have one historical importance. We had the provenance. We could prove exactly what it was. We knew the chain of ownership. The condition of that was actually terrible, and it was not a playable guitar, but the decision was made that you don't want to mess with the fact that it was all original and it was all the parts that he had touched. So if someone wanted to play that guitar, they would have had to replace the neck on it, but it was as it was the last time he'd touched it. And that's important too. You don't want things that have been messed with or changed in any way. And regardless, that guitar still sold for over $500,000, even though it's not an actual playable instrument. But it can be something extreme like that, which I call, with guitars specifically, having the most mojo. So when I look at someone's guitar collection, I'd say, this is the one they logged in the most hours playing. There's always kind of, I call it the one you're grabbing when your house is on fire. And oddly enough, there actually was the guitar that Tom Petty grabbed when his Malibu house was on fire. So those are real things, and that's not just something we make up. But then you have everything down to something very simple, and we see this all the time, where there's a lovely person who will come to a big auction that goes on for 3 days, sit in the room, and put up their paddle, hopefully, on lot after lot after lot, and not be able to afford something. And they're just desperate to own something. And to them, it's just the ability to participate and have something. For instance, I'm sure you remember who I'm talking about, Martin, the woman at the Marilyn Monroe sale in 2005, who at the end of 2 days, this poor woman had sat and just desperately wanted something, was almost in tears. She finally got something. And the entire room erupted into applause for her because they were so happy for her. And to be honest, for her, it wasn't the thing. It was just she wanted anything that connected her to Marilyn. So it can be, as you know, the best, most historically important, screen used, instantly recognizable prop, like a pair of ruby slippers, or it could just be anything that someone was able to get that made them feel good. And we're not immune to this, even though we're in this professionally. I have personally actually wept when I've gotten my hands on a piece that I desperately wanted for years. And the day I finally got it and looked at it, it like welled up with tears. I was so happy to have it. So I fully understand that. It's an emotional connection people have to these things. And that's what we hope for. And we just hope to make it easier for them to be able to get those things that they want. Because it's kind of like making magic happen when you get to touch a tangible thing that connects you to something that meant a lot to you as a child. Or a lot of people have family memories, so we might not even know the importance to them. We had a buyer at our share auction who took a mortgage out because he had a memory of watching this particular episode of Cher in this particular dress with his grandmother who had passed. And so, you know, sometimes you don't even know what it is, but it's all over the map, to be honest.
I think a lot of people might find this world something that they would be interested in, but they are intimidated by it. Talk a little bit about anybody can become a collector, or anybody can go into this auction world. You don't have to be Gordon Gekko. You can start somewhere. How would you suggest that somebody who's interested in starting to go after these kinds of collectibles, how can they begin, and what is the process for them?
It's really easy, and especially at Julian's, we're all inclusive because we represent the entertainment world. So it's like if people go to a show or they go to a movie, they want to be entertained. The auction is sort of the end game of that show or that movie. And so we want that entertainment factor to resonate throughout the auction experience. So it's not like a stuffy environment where it's money people that show up. Most of the items that we sell are below $3,000. So that'll give you people an idea that $3,000 is within range of a lot of people out there that could afford something. And I always say, buy something because you love it, even if it's a piece of art or whatever. Love it, because if you're going to have it in your home, you're going to be living with it, you have it in your office, wherever you choose to have it, you want to like it, because chances are it will appreciate in value. But if not, at least you've bought something that you're enjoying. And that's my number one lesson to people. But to us here at Julian's, what we love and we get energized, and Jason and Laura, I know, will agree with me on this, is we get the energy from the people and we see the emotions, and we remember that lady in 2005 who was bidding on the Marilyn Monroe item. We still remember her vividly to this day, and the reaction from everyone in the room with a standing ovation for somebody who didn't have a lot of money but wanted something and got something. And so we take exhibitions, we go to Japan, we go to China, we go to Europe, we had a big auction in Nashville last week. We're in Dallas right now with Dusty Hill from ZZ Top. And that's an incredible exhibition, and people are just coming through the door, taking a trip down memory lane, seeing some really cool, fun, whimsical items, intrinsically valuable items as well. Great costumes, great guitars, an amazing life and career represented in that auction gallery. And the auction takes place next week, December 7th, 8th, and 9th. And I think we'll set some new records, including that 1953 precision bass, Laura, that you talked about. That is the guitar that was in Dusty's hands more than any other guitar, and he has hundreds of guitars, and he bought it in a pawn shop in Dallas for $70 and the true in the case. So, but that's all a part of the story. That's what we're selling. The guitar itself is a nice vintage guitar, but you weave in Dusty Hill, Biddy Gibbons, and how they got it, and then its journey. That's the story we're telling. The guitar just is the item that tells the story. That's what people are buying, and that's what we're selling. And it just continues to increase. And younger generations, even though, you know, they're sort of less inclined to be buying or acquiring stuff at the same time because of technology. They'll see it on Instagram, they'll see our TikTok videos, Facebook, whatever. And we make it very easy for them to land on julianslive.com and click a button and place a bid. And then they get the bug, because if we get people in and people do get the bug, the auction bug, it's an adrenaline rush. And if you if you're bidding against someone in the room, the emotion, their egos, you know, wallets going against egos, we love that. And items selling for a huge money. And Kurt Cobain's guitar is an example that from MTV Unplugged we sold for over 6 million. Marilyn Monroe's dress when she sang Happy Birthday President Kennedy, 4.81 million. Kurt Cobain's Levi jeans last week set a world record for $412,750 for a pair of jeans with torn and holes and patched and all that. But again, it's the story, it's the history, and it's who wore them.
Yeah, totally iconic. Well, that said, Jason, let me ask you, you have a very exciting auction coming up for our audience. I think would love it. You've got props and you've got items from science fiction, fantasy, comic book films, both DC and Marvel. You've got an E.T. head. You've got robots from the Black Hole. You've got Tweaky from Buck Rogers in the 25th Century. And, of course, this podcast is from costume designer Marilyn Vance. You have the Rocketeer helmet, and she was the actual costume designer on that movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think Marilyn's kind of worked on – she's worked on so many amazing films. And interestingly enough, when I first started collecting – original props and costumes, I didn't have a lot of money, to go back to your question, like, how do you get started? And I picked a movie that no one was particularly interested in, Mystery Men. And I bought like a lot of the costumes for not a lot of money, but I ended up reaching out to Marilyn because she did the costumes for that movie. And it's just some nobody collector that was just starting like 20 years ago. She was nice enough to get on the phone with me and give me insights into what, you know, different tags meant, handwriting, stunt, hero. Like, she is amazing. So, you know, it's great because we come across a lot of things on films that she worked on. But with this sale, yeah, we're doing things a little bit differently with this Hollywood sale. We've sort of been evolving to really tailor what we're doing to our customers, to our buyers. And this time we're actually doing an evening session with Hollywood, which is the first time we're doing this. So the first day of the sale is actually going to be an evening sale. It's 95 lots, and it's all really amazing stuff. I mean, all the really iconic films of like the last 30 years, from Star Wars. We've got like all three major lightsabers from The Phantom Menace. We've got hoverboards. We've got the Mattel hoverboard. We've got the Pitbull hoverboard. We've got a full Batman suit from Batman Returns. One of my favorite little mini collections in the whole sale is we've got some original Tim Burton paintings from early in his career that came from his producing partner. This was even before, you know, Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Like, it's really stunning stuff. We've got the B9 robot, which is just one of the most iconic sci-fi pieces of all time, and that sold 20 years ago for $250,000. And we're really interesting to see what happens this time, because even a replica of that robot sold recently for that much. So we've got big expectations on that one. We've got a Zuni doll. So if anyone knows what the Zuni doll is,
Trilogy of Terror,
super rare, and that came from someone that worked on the film and worked with the director, so we're really excited about that. We've got all kinds of, you know, really cool vintage classic sci-fi stuff from the 50s and 60s, like models, costumes that just don't come up very often. But we've got just a whole array of all kinds of things. Even as we get into the classic Hollywood stuff and more contemporary drama, comedy, things like that. One of my favorite things is we've got Carrie Bradshaw's laptop from Sex and the City. There was only two that were used in the series, the other one's in the Smithsonian. So it's really an opportunity for people to get really rare items. And what I'm very excited about is we're doing a whole day of auctions surrounding the Big Lebowski. So we're working with the storyboard artist, J. Todd Anderson, and we've got literally every storyboard from the film except for one that he kept. but he worked with the Coen brothers, and he's worked with them since Raising Arizona. And he storyboards the entire film with them before they shoot one scene. And the artwork is magnificent. It has so much character. And we did an auction earlier this year with storyboards from Die Hard that really blew up. So we're really wanting to work with storyboard artists, because it's sort of one of those unsung art forms in the industry. And I mean, a lot of this work is really fantastic, and people don't see it because it's production work. It's not something you see on screen, but we'd really like to continue working with storyboard artists and really, really build this into a new category, like a new collectible category, and celebrate these artists that are really important to the process of filmmaking.
I gotta say, maybe I would be the only person in the world that's as excited about one of the things you're selling. And it's not, I don't think anybody but me would get this excited about it, but you have from the movie Destination Moon, the atomic Luna spaceship. And now I'm a huge George Pal fan. When I was 5 years old, my favorite movie was War of the Worlds. But the quadrilogy for me was Destination Moon, Conquest of Space, When Worlds Collide, and War of the Worlds. And to be able to get, I think, to speak to your what Martin was saying, to have, if I had the money, if I wasn't so mortgage poor, that's the kind of thing I think maybe would be within someone's means to get, would be that. I mean, you'd have to have a connection to the movie, I think. But for me personally, seeing that come up when I was reading your list of stuff, I'm like, oh, I don't think anyone, you know, I'd have it in my house and I'd have to explain what that was. People would be like, that list looks like a 50s rocket.
Auctions are so unique, because if you participate in them, whether you're online anywhere in the world, that's the thing. Like with Julian's, you know, you can bid online and watch and hear the auctioneer and feel like you're part of it. But when something comes up for auction that has meaning to you like that, and then there's those weeks leading up to the auction where you're sort of imagining like, I could actually possibly win and own this, but there's that, it's almost like you're going into battle, because you know other people are also interested in it. And there's no other way of buying things. It's not like you're going on Amazon and just clicking, you know, right, and buying something. Like, you don't know the outcome until it's happening. And you have, and as a participant, you're having to make this decision like, oh, can I go this much higher? And oh, three other people are bidding, so that means maybe it's even better than what I think it is. You know what I mean? There's just so much emotion wrapped up into it. And it's fun for us, because being at our own auctions and watching our bidders, like, you get invested, like you see how badly someone wants something and you start rooting. Oh, I really hope that person in the second row gets it, and sometimes they'll even come and talk to us before the auction, and you sort of know the background and context and history of like why it's important to them. And, you know, as an auction house, we're impartial, like the highest bidder wins. But personally, you're like, oh, I really want that person in row two to win it, because, right, you know, him and his wife got married, and, you know, whatever song came on when he proposed. And, you know, there's a lot of just very unique stories where we're finding cool things that bring meaning to people's lives. And I think it's important for people to have that escape and have, you know, something that sort of elevates their world that means something, that, and that experience they take with them forever. Like when someone wins something that is really important to them, that's like, that could be like a highlight of their life, you know, because sure, they might connect with a movie, and then they have this thing that they literally saw on screen with that actor holding it. And it you know, it's just a very powerful thing.
Laura, you know, I wanted to ask you in terms of when you know somebody passes away, or you find things, how do you go about acquiring something for auction? Like, what is it you have to go through? What process do you have to go through to get something to Julian's to actually auction it off?
Okay, I'm going to answer that, but I just wanted to add one more thing to the previous discussion. Oh, please, yeah, about if you're a beginner collector. The one other thing, because what Martin said is exactly what I always say: buy what you love, because you can never guarantee what's going to happen in the marketplace. So worst case scenario, you still have something you love. I feel like people who buy only because they're trying to speculate are the ones that usually get stung. And those are the pieces that don't go up. So maybe it's collector karma, I don't know. But my biggest piece of advice is also buy quality and not quantity. I think some people get so anxious to build a big collection that they would be better off buying one really good piece each year than 20 mediocre pieces. And those are the pieces more likely to kind of accrue value over time. So that's my thing. But as, in terms of how you get things into auction, obviously one of the big things for what we call single owner sales. So we call them multi-consignor and single owner sales. The single owners are obviously everything's from one person, the single owner. Multi-consigners, you could have 300 consigners for an auction of 1,200 lots because one person might consign one thing or another person might consign 50 things.
Right.
Just so that's clear. And obviously, for each person, the reasons are different. And in our world, we joke that there's death, debt, and divorce, the three D's of auctions. With the fourth one is actually discretion, which is sometimes people choose to liquidate or monetize something. They don't necessarily need the money. They just decide, I'd rather have $10,000 than that thing I've looked at for 20 years and I'm over it now. I'd rather get some new couch, right? So that's discretion. But there's a lot of different reasons. For the people in your world who are your listeners, one of the things I've come across a lot, because I spent 17 years in the independent appraising business, is I can't tell you how many times I've received phone calls from people in the industry who are hair, makeup, people who are storyboard artists who create their own work. And they discover sometimes that because of certain IRS restrictions, they're not allowed to derive tax benefits from donating some of their own work because there are certain rules around self-created works. And the IRS put those things in place because they didn't want something like a painter to just every year paint a new painting and then take a tax deduction by giving it to a museum, because you could do that. You could just keep creating things for the sake of taking tax benefits. So it's complicated, and I'm not giving tax advice because I'm not an accountant. But the people I have worked with, a lot of people in the industry who have things that were, according to their lawyers and accountants, going to be deemed self-created works or work product,
right,
are unable to derive. Like, many of them would love to see them at the new Academy Museum or see them. So that's one of the barriers for donations, actually, for museums. So oftentimes they decide, well, I can't really afford to do this without taking some financial benefit from it, so maybe I'd rather just sell them at auction. And so that's actually, for many people, I think, in your world of listeners, sometimes a defining factor in their decision making is that it's wonderful and I'd love to see them there. However, I'm not a charity, so I need to get something back out of it.
Right.
But everyone's reasons are different. And the process is basically, if someone's passed away, we're dealing with the trustees, the family. Depending upon the politics, you go in and meet with them, get a sense of what their expectations are, find out of what they have, what is the family planning to keep, what do they want to get rid of? Because we're not here to pressure people into taking away family heirlooms. They have to make those decisions on their own. And then we come in and evaluate kind of fairly, okay, this is what we would expect for the kind of things that you have here.
Sure.
And you evaluate them. I mean, sometimes I could say, I don't know what the current rejection rate is at Julian's, but there's a pretty high rejection rate because a lot of times you have to do a tremendous amount of research to, less so with people who are the actual storyboard artists donating their storyboards. We don't have to worry so much about authenticity. And also with the estates, we don't have to worry that it's coming right out of their home. So that makes things easy. But because this is kind of the Wild West in some of the collecting circles, boy, do we have to do a lot of research. And it is really tough out there because there's so much bad stuff floating around that we try to police and do the best we can.
These items are so valuable now that, you know, people, there's copycat people out there that try to copycat or imitate items in the hopes of making a quick buck. And that's where our due diligence comes in and where it's really important that we authenticate everything and we make sure, you know, the chain of ownership, the provenance it all adds up before we will introduce it to the world of buyers. So a lot of work goes on in the background, the discovery, the research, and the actual authentication of the items.
And suddenly the person who created it might reach out and say, actually, I worked on that. And it's like, great. Always feel free to reach out. We love talking to the people who make these things because they have the best information of anyone on the planet. We just don't always know how to get in touch with them. And we try, trust me.
Yeah, that's how I got acquainted with Julian's in the first place, was because I was a collector and had a blog called the Original Prop Blog. And the focus of my website was really just trying to help other collectors be more sophisticated with and be careful about what they're buying and doing research and offering, you know, authentication services and sort of building a network of who to ask for authenticating all different kinds of properties, because it's all very like one off and you know, no one knows everything about how to authenticate, you know, the myriad of different types of even just film and television props and costumes, but being tapped into a network of people that have good intentions is really key, because then, you know, if you come across something that you want to buy and you're not sure if it's authentic or not, if you have that network, you can reach out. And then if that person doesn't know, they might know someone else who knows. So a lot of it is just having a trusted network of people that have good intentions. And that's how I got to know Julian's, was because I was doing a lot of articles about different auction houses and I was interviewing principals of different auction houses. And then I met Darren and Martin, and I was honestly kind of just shocked, because I was like, oh wow, these guys are actually earnest and they want to do the right thing and make sure what they're selling is correct. And then once I interviewed them, as they were building more into sci-fi and more contemporary Hollywood kind of genre stuff, they would always ask me if I had any thoughts on it. If I said something that I thought wasn't right, they wouldn't put it in sale. And then, you know, kind of just snowballed from there, my involvement with the company. So we've always, you know, an auction house is only good as their reputation, kind of their track record. And it's very important to us to always make sure we have really strong faith and feeling behind what we're putting up for sale. So,
right. Martin, you know, you came from the investment banking world. I love that you came and then over to this world, which has become, like you pointed out, very lucrative in terms of investing, just like art has become, you know, very lucrative. And now we even have, I keep getting solicitations to buy in, to invest in artworks as like almost as a stock option, where you can, this Banksy is coming up and you can buy into this Banksy and you can own part of it. How do you see the auction world like developing? Because, you know, Hollywood's only been around for a little over 100 years. It's not like you can buy the Mona Lisa. You know, Da Vinci was painting 500 years ago. So with props, with rock and roll and movies, they're fairly new items. But as the years tick by, they're going to become more and more and more valuable as we get further away from where they originated. How do you how do you see the collectible market, actually the high-end collectible market, becoming more and more appealing to investors? How is that going to work moving forward? So people, we've talked a lot about, oh, buy something you love, but there's also the investment element here as well, which I can see being fairly lucrative and lucrative in a fun way, as opposed to, you know, looking at numbers on a spreadsheet. If you actually have a piece like that B9 robot, that's not going to lose its value. But I mean, how is this going to evolve for people that might be looking for it as an investment opportunity?
Yeah, and we're just in the early stages of these items now suddenly growing up and being considered an asset class. When I left Merrill Lynch 20 years ago, like, they frowned upon me, like it was memorabilia, and it wasn't Sotheby's, it wasn't Christie's, who was Julian's. And now suddenly these items are serious items. They're part of your investment portfolio. And I think if you look back to when the Victoria and Albert Museum in London did an exhibition, 100 Years of Hollywood, and it showcased all the amazing, the Maltese Falcon, Ruby Slippers, Dorothy's Dress, Wizard of Oz, et cetera, et cetera. It sort of gave credibility to them. And then the V&A followed up with an incredible David Bowie exhibition on all his clothes, handwritten notes, lyrics, etc., etc. They sold more tickets for that exhibition than any other exhibition. Then the Metropolitan Museum in New York did the Play It Loud exhibition with all the music instruments. And so that gave credibility to the fact that these items are, yes, they're working instruments from movies or from, you know, music events, etc. You know, when we sold Kurt Cobain's guitar for $6 million, we had a syndicate come to us that offered $10 million to the winning bidder to see if they could own that guitar. And so the idea is they're owning a piece of that guitar, just like they're a shareholder in any other instrument. And in years to come, when they cash out, you know, chances are it'll sell for more than what their share is currently worth. So yeah, it's just beginning. This is going to become more and more part of, because people can relate to it. It's interesting. It's much more fun. And now, recently we saw, and I always talked about the difference between coming from Wall Street, where I was selling intangible assets, to now selling really fun, cool, tangible items that you can see and touch and hold and talk about. And then we did 360 when we start selling NFTs, non-fungible tokens, which are sort of on a little bit of a down low right now, but I still think NFTs are here to stay. And certainly for the younger generations coming up, where they're less inclined to own stuff, but they still want to have the cool factor and owning an NFT because they grew up in the digital world. So that's also an area that's going to grow significantly over the next years to come.
Do you think that there's a new area of interest that is just opening up in terms of owning? Like, movies and rock and roll are the obvious things that you can go to, but is there something that maybe that no one's thought of yet that you see as the future, a collectible market that no one's quite tapped into?
And we have conversations about that almost on a daily basis. Like, who's the next hot commodity? Who's the contemporary artist today that's affordable, that's going to have the staying power of Cher or Barbara Streisand or the Rolling Stones? Like, who can you get today? Like Taylor Swift, is she going to be around in, you know, seven decades time of performing? You know, she's obviously very hot right now. We're looking at that. We're also looking at other areas. Obviously, street art is something we've branched into probably 2013. I think we started selling Banksy's, and that's an area that has huge growth potential as well. Like, street art is crossover into pop culture, if you will. So we see that as a huge growth area, the NFTs, as I said. But this is something where people can relate to, and they're going to continue to be a part of this auction world. And we're also viewing luxury and fashion auctions, because fashion as well, and handbags, would you believe, are also an asset class now that people are spending $300,000-$400,000 for a Kelly Birkin bag, etc., which is unbelievable. But you know, there's only so many come out each year, and already, like, when Hermes come out with their line of bags, like, there's a limited amount, and when they sell out, the actual value of those bags, the retail value, has probably doubled or tripled right from the get-go. So we're looking at that as well, and where people are spending their money and what interests them and what they can relate to.
Amazing. It's just amazing. Now, Laura, I want to ask you, I guess, to as we wrap this up, have you ever gone someplace and you weren't expecting to find something, but you did wind up finding the Ark of the Covenant? Or something that was just so amazing that you were like, oh, a surprise, or something you weren't expecting to find, a holy grail? Yeah.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because the actual Ark of the Covenant, not the actual, like, in real life, I mean, movie, because I also do Antiques Roadshow in Sacramento a number of years ago. A very quiet guy walked up to the table and he sat down pieces of the Death Star and some other models from Star Wars. And I looked at one of my colleagues who's a total Star Wars fanatic, and I said, hey, I gave it to him. I said, do you want to do this one? Because I know you'd probably love to talk to this guy. And he was over the moon. Oh, yes, yes, yes. And he starts talking to the kid. And it turns out the kid's dad worked for Industrial Light and Magic.
Oh.
And then he says, but I also have an Ark of the Covenant in my trunk. And we were like, why are you burying the lead? Like, everyone has little pieces of the Death Star. Let's go get the Ark of the Covenant. So he brought it out, and literally he pulled an Ark of the Covenant out of his trunk, and it was the model that the lighting guys built. It was not used on screen, but when they were testing all of the lighting effects for the ghosts coming out of the Ark in that scene, they needed something to use that was metallic reflective gold. And so these guys used, like, glue guns and spray paint, pieces of old trophies, and made kind of like a stand-in Ark of the Covenant to use for the lighting stuff. And so, yes, we have unexpectedly discovered the Ark of the Covenant.
That's amazing. And Jason, you know, going into this auction that you've got the ZZ Top auction coming up in a few days, and then mid-December you've got this great auction with so many cool pieces from movies and TV shows. If there was one thing that you could find and sell, or one, what is the one thing that you would love to have Julian's acquire and be able to put up at auction? If you could have anything in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, because I work for Julian's and Martin, I kind of have to say the ruby slippers or he'll kill me.
It's kind of on all of our bucket lists, I think.
You know, we're talking about all this amount of money and what we're selling and what people are paying.
Sure.
We always encourage a charitable component to our auctions, and we take great pride in the philanthropic side of the business, because when we go to sit down with Cher, or let's say Chuck Hill, Dusty Hill's widow, and we mentioned charity, she said absolutely she wanted to donate a generous portion to Music Cares, which is the charitable component of the Grammys. So that's musicians helping other musicians. So every conversation we have with people that come to us to sell at Julian's, we always encourage, like Ringo Starr for the Lotus Foundation. All of the celebrities, they're asked on a daily basis to donate to charities, and they have their own charities. They do incredible work. And same applies when it comes to an auction. So when people come to Julian's auctions, chances are when they're bidding on items, a portion of the proceeds of the item that you're buying will go to benefit a charity. And that's sort of the feel-good factor about this. And we also like to pay homage to the amazing, I gave an interview earlier about the Hollywood auction, in particular Edith Head's sketches, and like that's like the storyboards that Jason spoke about.
Yeah.
That's original artwork, but that's the creation of the magic that we take for granted when we go to the movies and we sit down with our popcorn and we entertain for 2 hours. We take all the props and all the clothing and everything we see for granted, but we have to remember the amount of work that these prop people and the designers and all the people in the background put into this effort to create the magic that we get to talk about and we get to sell at our auctions going forward.
Well, I think it's a great place to leave it. You know, I want to thank you all for being here. I want to thank you, Jason, for being here, and Laura, for you to be here. Thank you for your time. And of course, Martin, thank you for being here.
Absolute pleasure. Yeah, thank you. And thanks for your patience with the technology on my end.
No, it's great. And once again, you can find the link below to Julian's Auctions website. And of course, I would encourage everybody to look at the upcoming auction they have December 14th and 15th, because there's so many cool props that I know that our audience would love to see. A special thank you to founder and executive producer Martika Ibarra, co-founder, costume designer, the legendary Marilyn Vance, and of course, John Campia from The John Campia Show. Thank you to all of our viewers for tuning in, and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Tune in to the audio version wherever you listen to podcasts. I am, of course, your host, Robert Meyer Burnett, and you can find me on Instagram at RMBurnett, or find me on Twitter at BurnettRM, or on YouTube at The Burnett Work. Thanks very much. Like, subscribe, and give us your comments. What would you like to see on the channel? Right down below. Thanks very much for watching, and we'll see you on the next episode of Designing Hollywood.